thought, as this was the last evening that we'll be here, we would leave the evening open for a darshan in which devotees could ask any questions which you might have that may or may have not been related to the classes, because generally you can only ask questions during the Bhagavatam class, and the verse may not be about something that you're interested in, or, as was the case this morning, some issues came up, and after the class, different devotees were asking Bhrigupati Prabhu for clarification. So he asked if I could see 6 or 7 different devotees, so I thought, well, let's just have a darshan, and we can discuss it with the devotees if they'd like. So I'll leave the floor open. If anyone would like to ask any particular questions, we can discuss. Yes? Exactly how that takes place, I don't know. I've never read in Srila Prabhupada's book exactly how the arrangement is made. Of course, we can say for sure that the spiritual master does come back, because that's literally stated, that if the disciple is not successful, then the spiritual master comes back. If that also means that he makes certain arrangements, I couldn't shastrically answer that. I did ask the same question to Atmatava Prabhu, and he said, although I don't have his shastric reference, he said, yes, the spiritual master may make the arrangement, because obviously my question was similar but in more detailed, that if the devotee is not successful in purifying himself to the point of going back to Godhead, then logically we could understand that devotees may take birth in different situations, in different places, and different times, and so forth. So how would it be possible for the spiritual master to be present in each of those places simultaneously? So Amitabha Prabhu mentioned that the spiritual master will make arrangements that the disciple can continue to progress in devotional service. That's how he answered it. So that would be my authoritative shastric statement would be that Prabhupada said the guru comes back. Amitabha is a very respected senior devotee in this movement. He'll also be visiting here. And his answer was that both can take place. And he went so far as to say that, well, again, as I mentioned in class the other day, whatever is dearest to one's heart, that determines one's next situation, one's next birth. So if the spiritual master is very, very dear to one's heart, then it may be that one will take birth in that place. But if not, certainly we can understand, just as I quoted this morning, although Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is no longer present physically on this planet, Prabhupada felt with great confidence in a letter I received from Srila Prabhupada, because we were writing to Prabhupada and saying that we missed his separation. It was quite difficult. And then Prabhupada quoted, he said, yes, he said, the separation is there. He said, but I'm always feeling that my Guru Maharaj is watching over and protecting me. So the blessings of the spiritual master are always there for the disciple. It is a real relationship. It is a transcendental relationship. And it is being arranged by the Lord. Exactly the details, that I don't know. But certainly we find ourselves in a very auspicious situation at the moment, and we can understand that it's an arrangement by the Lord. Prabhupada said it's not by chance that you come to this movement. And actually he stated that, well, he would often give the example in the Svetasvatara Upanishad, where it stated the two birds in the tree, and one bird is eating the fruit of the tree, and the other bird is the witness. Ishvara Sarabhutana, Rideshe Arjuna Tishtati. The Lord is situated in the heart, directing the wanderings of all living entities. Sarvasya Chaham Hridi Shanivishto Mata Shmitir Ginam Apohanam Cha. He's giving knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So when the jivatma, or the living entity, becomes frustrated with this materialistic way of life, then he'll turn to the other bird, and the other bird will direct him on the spiritual path. So, in the Nectar of Devotion is described, five essential features or principles for advancing in spiritual life is to accept the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master, to take initiation from him, to follow his instructions, to be trained by him, and to follow in the footsteps of previous acharyas. So the two are not contradictory, actually they're complementary. So we can appreciate that part of Krishna's guidance, if not his most important guidance, is that he directs us towards the external manifestation of the Supersoul. The Guru is the external manifestation of the Supersoul. So as the Supersoul is very aware of our particular mentality, and therefore makes the arrangements, we can understand that he will become present as the external manifestation. In other words, Krishna will send a Guru. Ramanda Brahmatikam Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasad Bhai Bhakti Lata Bij is described that after wandering through so many universes and species of life, by the combined mercy of the Lord and his representative, one gets the Bhakti Lata Bij. It doesn't say by our own calculations and plans, you know, that now I'm going to make a plan. But no, the arrangement is made by the Lord. So just as the Lord Tesham Satadayuktanam Bhajatam Pratipurvikam Dadami Buddhi Yogam, he gives us the intelligence how to come back to Godhead. What is that intelligence? He directs us to surrender to the superior intelligence of the spiritual master. That's actually our intelligence. Independently, we have no intelligence, but for the Lord giving direction in the heart and externally as a spiritual master. So that verse, actually we can say that verse means, it also means the Lord is giving direction. He's enlightening us within our heart. But he's also giving us the intelligence to surrender to his representative, and that representative becomes our guiding light. He becomes our intelligence. So these are all transcendental phenomena, actually. And I was listening to a lecture of Prabhupada the other day. It was on either the appearance or disappearance of his Guru Maharaj. And Prabhupada broke down in tears. And he was saying, how could we know that I would leave India and come to America? How could we know that you would come forward and help me in this Krishna conscious movement? How could we know? They said, this is all the arrangement of my Guru Maharaj, he said, by his mercy. How could we know these things are happening? So the pastimes are unfolding of Śrīla Prabhupāda. But it is the Lord's arrangement. So it is also the Lord's arrangement that we get Guru. And our thought, or our attitude should be to show the Lord our sincerity and our sincere desire in that regard. Of course, there's been much discussion, and rightfully so, about the position of the Guru in our movement. We've gone through some rough patches. And that should certainly go on. But no less important than the qualifications of the Guru is the qualifications of disciple. And I think that should also be as much discussed and meditated upon and strived for by all of us, either to become qualified disciples, if we are now initiated, or to aspire to become qualified disciples. So the Lord will definitely reciprocate with our desire. The Lord is making all arrangements. He's asking it to simply depend upon him. Chaitasa sarvakamani mai sannishamatpara buddhi yogam apashritam matchita satatam vavam. In all activities and for their results, simply depend upon me. Work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Sarva dharmam paricchaja mamekam saranam vraja aham tam sarva papebhyo moksha isi masujaha. Just surrender. Abandon all this dharma and just surrender. I will give you all protection, do not fear. Yogik shamam bahamyam. For those who worship me with love and devotion, I carry what they lack and preserve what they have. So if we actually show the Lord our true sincerity, then as everything else that we have now been gifted with in Krishna consciousness, it is the mercy of the Lord, and similarly the Lord will make the arrangement for us. So exactly what happens and how the arrangement is made, I don't know. How could we have ever known or even imagined what has happened till now? In your wildest imagination, you could have never imagined when you met devotees, you know, the good fortune that you've come to now. And really, what is the point of trying to figure it all out? I told the story, we're sitting with Prabhupada, the lady raised her hand, what was on my last life? Do you know Swamiji? Prabhupada said, yes, I know what you were in your last life. And then he went on to something else. And she raised her hand again. What was I in my last life, Swamiji? And Prabhupada ignored her. And at the end, she became, you know, well, I want to know what. Prabhupada said, this is a useless question. He said, this is not pariprashana sevaya. It is not so important. What is important is what you're going to be in your next life. That's what's important. So we may not know that the workings of the Lord, but we are His surrendered servants, and we are carrying out His instructions. So as the Lord is maintaining us in this lifetime, nitya nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam, eko bahanam, yovadidatikamam, as He is making all arrangements, materially and spiritually for us, we should rest assured that all arrangements will be made in the future. And as Shastric evidence states, janme janme prabhu say, that guru is there birth after birth, then exactly how that will be, if there's not more detail, then we simply accept that somehow or other, this person will be my eternal guide. And as he's sometimes present now and sometimes not present now, yet we're making tangible advancement by his blessings. So similarly, we can also conclude that distance and that time and space do not deter the relationship of guru and disciple. Just like now, your spiritual master, say Prabhu Vishnu Maharaj is here, Tamal Krishna Maharaj is here, Jagadish Maharaj is here, then they all have disciples here, so they're instructing those disciples, and then they go to some distant place, Vancouver, Nepal, China. So they're not physically present, but their instruction is there and their blessings are there. There is time and space separating. So what is death? Death is also another type of distance based on time and space. But just as time and space now does not in any way that the potency of the relationship or the function of the relationship is not at all disturbed by distance of time and space now. So why should we consider that any difference is there if we give up this body? Yes? Could you say that again? Well, obviously the relationship will be eternal if both are qualified. So therefore one should be very careful in choosing the spiritual master. I'd just like to read to you. Other words, one should not think. Prabhupada said, so many have gone, but one should think, I will never go. That attitude is there for the disciple. That determination must be there. So many have gone, but I will not go. And as far as the spiritual master is concerned, if one even thinks the spiritual master is going to fall, then one should not accept him as guru at that point. In other words, if one is thinking the spiritual master is going to fall, then that means one cannot have absolute faith in the spiritual master. So it would be premature to put one's faith at that time. But there is such a thing as absolute faith. And that absolute faith is, again, a transcendental phenomenon. It comes about as a result of reciprocal service. One can put his faith in someone absolutely. We were discussing this the other day with some devotees, that even if the village men or one's family members think that the guru is an ordinary person, that does not mean that the disciple should see the guru as an ordinary person. So it appears to be contradictory. You know, the god brothers and the family members and the neighborhood men may see something with which they can correct the godbrother or the family member. But still, the disciple's attitude is, my spiritual master is absolute. So how is that? How could that possibly exist, coexist together? It can coexist because the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple is just that. The spiritual master is the transparent medium for the disciple. The disciple has accepted him based on Shastric conclusion, and the spiritual master has accepted. Therefore, the disciple is experiencing Krishna. He's experiencing the mercy of the Guru Parampara, most specifically our founder, Acharya Srila Prabhupada, because that is the duty of the Guru, to link his disciple to Srila Prabhupada. That is our qualifications. And therefore, the disciple is feeling transcendental inspiration, and he is getting transcendental knowledge as a result of that particular type of relationship. Just like different relationships bring different results. It's obvious. Friendship, parenthood, childhood, there's different mellows, there's different results. So the transcendental relationship of guru and disciple produces divya jnana, transcendental knowledge, and that becomes a realized experience for the disciple. That's why there may be an initial attraction to someone, but actually a period must elapse, some time must elapse, where there's a reciprocation of service and surrender to guru and the blessings of the guru, and as a result, you know, Krishna consciousness becomes manifest. And there's no doubt in the disciple's mind where from that mercy is coming from. So it is possible, and I'm taking this from a purport in Srila Prabhupada's books, where he mentions that the village men may see as ordinary. It does not mean that the disciple should see as ordinary. So even in our own right, we should think, so many have gone, but I will never fall. But as far as one's relationship with the spiritual master, one should never even think that his spiritual master could fall. So, therefore, that faith must be there. And I'd like to read, this is a conversation with Narayan Maharaj, in which Narayan Maharaj is discussing the unfortunate past where the gurus have fallen, and he's discussing the principle of reinitiation. And he's saying, after the demise of any prominent acharya, referring to Srila Prabhupada in this example, the link of Guru Parampara should be continued, but it may be that there is a danger of becoming fallen. Then for a certain period we can watch and pray to God that such a person, the fallen guru, may be rectified. And the interviewer says, by watch you mean that no one takes diksha, Narayan Maharaj. Until we have full faith in the guru, how can we be initiated by him? That's my point. And in the case of a fallen guru, when one has taken diksha from a guru who falls down, and again he takes from another guru who falls down, in that case we should watch and see that the next guru is reliable. Guru should be reliable. Interviewer. Should be reliable so you can have faith. Then no faith, don't take initiation. Narayan Maharaj. Until then, watch and see. And Gauranga, Krishna Chandra, Sridhar Prabhupada, for the time being, they are to be treated as guru, shiksha guru. And when a reliable Brahmanishta and Shabda Brahmana, knowing guru, is found, then certainly one should be reinitiated. So many have come to me, and I have said like this, if you don't want another guru, if you have no faith in anyone now, if you have been initiated by one and he has fallen, and you took initiation again, and again another falls, then you should wait for a little time and see whether a qualified devotee is there from whom we can take reinitiation. If we see that no such person is found for the time being, then you should treat Swamiji as your guru and go on your chanting and devotional service. Take Swamiji as your shiksha guru, referring to Prabhupada, and have some other as shiksha guru, and this will do. And again, if you see that some qualified person is eventually found, then you should be reinitiated. As for the newcomer, it is sure that he should be initiated by a living guru. So, one should not enter into the relationship with the mentality that perhaps it will be broken again. One should have faith in that person that he will not fall. If he falls, of course, that's an unfortunate situation. But we can't base our whole philosophy on if, you know, this is going to happen. We have to depend upon Krishna. And so that our faith will be strong and that we'll develop the full benefit of that Vaishnava relationship with the Guru, we should have firm faith. And And then when that firm faith is there, then surely, as Narayana Maharshi is saying, we should take reinitiation. And until then, we should wait. There's no harm in waiting. Prabhupada and the assembled devotees are giving us their shelter and their protection. And in due course of time, when faith again manifests, then one can be reinstated in that essential principle of diksha. Does that answer your question? Yeah. It's eternal if he becomes rectified. And if he doesn't become rectified, then the relationship is no longer eternal. And I'll read to you from Questions and Answers on Guru Ashraya Supplement, a paper to offer guidance from the GBC on this particular issue. I don't know if... Have you all read this? This was a paper which came with the GBC resolutions this year. Did everyone have an opportunity to read this? This is very important. It's an essential paper. It should be read by everyone. But just to refresh our memory and reiterate the point, this is coming from question 3. If one's guru performs some wrongful act, breaking Vaishnava regulative principles, what should one do? Take it from the very beginning. Answer. According to Sri Krishna Bhajanamrita, in such a case, one should personally confront the spiritual master and appeal for his rectification, but one should not give him up. One should take shelter of Lord Sri Krishna and continue in one's prescribed devotional service in the association of devotees. One should be guided by the bona fide instructions of the guru, or one should use one's own intelligence, considering the relevant instructions from sadhu, guru, and shastra. In all cases, one should continue one's devotional service. And there are various shastric references to this in Krishna Bhajamrita, which, if you feel necessary, we could refer to. Question 4. But what if the guru gives up being a devotee, becomes an impersonalist, an offender to devotees, or simply becomes addicted to sinful life? Answer. If the initiating guru falls so deeply that he gives up the Vaishnava mentality, offends the Vaishnavas, adopts the bogus philosophy, or goes on repeatedly performing sinful acts, yes, one must reject him and take reinitiation. To make smooth and steady progress in Krishna consciousness, we need to come under the discipline and guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. And if circumstances oblige us to reject the spiritual master from whom we have received initiation, we must come under the shelter of another. How should a disciple determine whether his guru has fallen so seriously that the guru should be rejected? This is coming closer to the point now. Answer. Srila Narottam Das Thakur advises us to follow the instructions of Guru Shastra and Guru Sadhu and Shastra. And even if the Guru has fallen, the help of Sadhu and Shastra are still with us. So we should be guided by Srila Prabhupada's instructions with the help from advanced devotees. One should be careful never to reject a spiritual master whimsically. The members of ISKCON should follow the instructions of the scriptures under the guidance of well-situated devotees and the GBC. So this last part is significant. That there comes a point where, due to becoming an impersonalist or an offender or being addicted to sinful activities, there comes a point where one cannot wait any longer for the rectification. In other words, this, at what point that is, that's determined by our governing board commission, who gives one the authority to initiate. No one can initiate independently. One may be very qualified, but like anything, one must receive the blessings of higher authority. Just like Prabhupada said, one may have the qualifications of a high court judge, but unless he gets appointed, his qualifications don't mean anything. So just as one can be appointed, that appointment can be taken away, because it is all by the blessings of our superiors that we receive this service on behalf of Srila Prabhupada. So well-situated devotees, senior devotees, and the governing board commission, when they feel that that person, or persons as the case has been in the past, are no longer qualified, then they will take back the authority And at that time, the devotee should feel that this personality is no longer qualified to give me diksha, relationship. Now, what happens in the future if such a personality comes back and rectifies himself and again becomes properly situated? This is question number 14. What if one spiritual master falls from devotional service, his disciples reject him, but considerably later he comes back? Now, of course, GBC is not going to take back that authority immediately, because the devotees are by nature very merciful, and certainly being such an important relationship, guru-disciple, they will do everything in their power to rectify that particular person. But if it becomes obvious and time has elapsed, then it is their duty actually to, being concerned with the disciples, to take that personality's diksha authority away. So, what if he comes back? Answer. The GBC body expects that if a guru falls and considerably later comes back, as a humble Vaishnava, he will not place claims on his former disciples. And I've, practically in every case, as far as I know, those who are no longer initiating have actually told their disciples to take shelter elsewhere. That former guru, by his own deviations, has broken the guru-disciple relationship, and the disciple has legitimately rejected him. So even if should the guru return, the former disciple's obligation to him no longer exists. Apart from this, the GBC body holds that a guru has been formally removed by the GBC must permanently forfeit all claims to his former disciples. So that particularly is concerning diksha. Of course, one cannot legislate the heart. We should follow authority. We should follow this authority of the GBC, this decision. But we may also understand that as we have, at this moment are maintaining shiksha, relationships that are very important to us. Similarly, it would not be out of context, I think, that if someone came back, that one could not develop a close relationship with the personality and consider and also continue to receive guidance. But according to GBC regulations, that person will not be the Diksha Guru. Does that come closer to answering your question? Are you sure? Or do you want me to say more? At what point we should reject? We should accept the authority of GBC. It doesn't mean that we throw the baby out with the bathwater, we throw our heart out. But we should seek shelter elsewhere. When that shelter comes, that's all up to Krishna. But philosophically, we should be correct. Taking diksha, okay. The first question was?
Is it actually necessary? If the GBC said that you should do this, otherwise you are linked with the referendum.
Okay. Well, again, I'll read. If the guru gives up being a devotee, etc., etc., and it becomes a sinful life, answer, if the initiating guru falls so deeply that he gives up the Vaishnava mentality, offends the Vaishnavas, etc., yes, one must reject him and take reinitiation. That's a GBC resolution. It's a question. Laws. These are situated as resolutions. So yes, one must reject him and take reinitiation. Now, for Shastric evidence, there are several verses, one of which I will quote from Jiva Dharma, from Thakur Bhakti Vinod. This is an appendix to the paper with various quotes in relationship to the different issues. And this particular point of taking reinitiation, which means to take mantra, is described in one verse by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Shturishangi o Krishna abhakta avaishnava upadishta mantra lavakarle naraka gamana haya ata eva yata shastra punaraya vaishnava gura nikata mantra rahana karebe. So I won't go through the word for word with the Bengali, but I'll just read the in English. One who associates with women and who is not or is not a devotee of Krishna, of a non-devotee instructed a mantra, if one receives, hell he goes. Therefore, according to scriptures, again, a Vaishnava spiritual master from mantra one should receive. So if you couldn't follow this, what it means is that if one's a spiritual master, if one has taken initiation from one who is not a devotee of Krishna, or one who becomes a fallen as a result of associating with women, or Stri Sangi means as a result of bad association, becomes fallen. Therefore, according to scriptures, again, one should accept a Vaishnava spiritual master, Nikata Mantra Gahana Karebe, and one should receive the mantra. I was looking for this verse. Yes? Madhuri's not here. We're having a darshan right now. Who's calling? Oh. Yeah, I'm in the middle of a darshan, and I don't see her in the room here. Okay. Hare Krishna. So here it's mentioned, mantra. And there are also other relevant shastric references. So that's the shastric reference. So let us discuss. In other words, GBC has said, yes, we should take reinitiation. That is a conclusion here. And let's just take quick question 7 just to substantiate this point again. Can maybe open a window. If one needs to be reinitiated, how soon should one accept reinitiation? Answer, only as soon as one develops sufficient faith in an advanced devotee. One who finds an advanced devotee and one whom has confidence, one should serve him submissively and inquire from him. And that devotee may reciprocate one's service, acting in the mood of a bona fide spiritual master. After one has considered the qualities of such an advanced devotee, and one's faith in him has sufficiently developed, one should surrender to him and accept him as one's spiritual master. If one serves Krishna seriously and sincerely, Krishna will reveal everything in due course of time. Okay, so let's develop this now. The second part of your question was that if senior men are coming, like Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Jagadish Maharaj and Prabhu Vishnu Maharaj, then wouldn't that be sufficient? So this is called Shiksha. Question 8. If the disciple of a fallen guru develops a Shiksha guru relationship with a senior devotee within ISKCON, can that relationship be strong enough to obviate, which means to not necessarily to do away with the need for formal Diksha? Answer. One should not think that a relationship with a Shiksha guru does away the need for initiation. Whether the acharyas have prescribed wherever the acharyas have prescribed reinitiation, we should follow their prescription. Still, we should note that the essence of initiation consists not in the formalities, but of the disciple's eternal commitment to serving the guru and the guru's commitment to delivering the disciple. In that sense, if one's relationship with a Shiksha guru is sufficiently deep, the initiation ceremonies seal a relationship that already exists. As Narottam Das Thakur says, Chakshur Dan Diloje Janme Janme Prabhu Se, he who has opened my eyes, he is my master birth after birth. As conditioned souls, we generally require the prescribed formalities to foster this commitment. In the Gaudiya tradition, initiation may sometimes take place even without a fire sacrifice or other rituals or formalities. For example, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu initiated Sridhar Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami with no other formalities than changing their names. Sridhar Prabhupada, however, initiated his disciples with a fire sacrifice and other formal procedures. This is the standard he set for ISKCON, so this is the standard we should follow. So I can elaborate on that. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, position of both the Shiksha and the Diksha gurus is discussed. And as we've many times heard, one can have, and it's best if one does have, as much faith in the Shiksha guru as one does in the Diksha guru. But we should understand that the function of the two is different, in the sense that one's relationship with the Shiksha guru may or may not be eternal. But certainly the relationship with the Diksha guru is eternal. And therefore, in our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, to ensure our going back to Godhead and our continued ongoing process of training and enlightenment, we need to guarantee that fact by Diksha. If Shiksha was sufficient, then why did Prabhupada give diksha? Granted, shiksha is essential and is very important. So then why didn't Prabhupada just give us shiksha? Why did Prabhupada himself give diksha? So as it was important then, because we need that eternal relationship, that commitment. In other words, it's a commitment. Just like a man and a woman, they meet, but the marriage ceremony seals the relationship. So in a transcendental way, the initiation ceremony seals the commitment on behalf of the disciple and the spiritual master for an eternal relationship. So, as diksha is essential then, over shiksha, in that particular context, then why should we obviate it now? That we've lost that diksha. Certainly we have shiksha, but we always had shiksha when Prabhupada was there, but Prabhupada gave diksha. So we should continue with shiksha, certainly, but we should also... establish the diksha, because both are needed. Shiksha and diksha are needed. Not just diksha, but shiksha. And not just shiksha, but diksha. My main point I'm trying to make is that as it was essential when we didn't have it, it is just as essential now that we've lost it. It was essential when we didn't have it. The importance of diksha is paramount throughout our scriptures. And now that we've lost it, we should regain it for those who have lost it. Now, another point to make is that, I'll make two more points. Number one, shiksha gurus don't take karma. Many times our Vaishnava acharyas have elaborated on the point that, you know, without actually moving the obstacles of that karma, karma doesn't just mean sinful reactions. It does mean that, of course. But what is the phenomenon of sinful reaction? A particular mentality is developed. If one has sinful reaction within one's heart, the karmic reactions, then that produces not only the physical, perhaps the physical, but it also produces a certain consciousness, a certain mentality, a certain state of mind. Karma is also gross and subtle. So in order to give us a blank slate, a free slate, whereby we can progress without too much obstacle, actually, when the spiritual master initiates, one can practically understand he absorbs the personality of the disciple. That's why one must be strong to be guru. And if one takes too many disciples and he's not qualified, then he may fall down. Just like someone comes in your house, he becomes part of the family, he becomes part of the atmosphere, he becomes part of the problem, he becomes part of the solution. The guru-disciple relationship is not just, you know, throwing grains in the fire, getting a new name. It's a very profound thing. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Jagayan Mahadi, his body turned black. His body turned, his Gauranga, but his body turned black. So in Prabhupada's books, in that particular book entitled The Spiritual Master and the Disciple, it wasn't published widely, but I'm sure you know of that book. There's a whole section there where Prabhupada said that the guru must take the karma of the disciple. To give the disciple a chance to advance in devotional service, the guru takes the karma. And, you know, the guru is not Krishna. So, therefore, the guru has to undergo some inconvenience on behalf. Sometimes he sees a bad dream. Sometimes he gets a sinus infection. Sometimes something happens. And he absorbs. So, therefore, if you can eat a lot of japati, if you have a good digestion, you can eat a lot of japatis. But if you don't have good digestion, then don't eat so many. So, you know, one should understand his spiritual position, his spiritual strength, and act accordingly. So, anyway, the point I'm making is that diksha guru, we've never seen shastrically where shiksha guru, that doesn't obviate the need for shiksha guru. I mean, I'll just speak from my personal experience, you know. Prabhupada is my spiritual master, but without Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Bhakti Chumraj, Giriwash Swami, you know, Bhrigupati, Alanath Prabhu, all these devotees, I have no hope of ever understanding who is Srila Prabhupada. So actually, Shiksha Guru, one of the primary functions of Shiksha Guru is to strengthen the diksha relationship. by his preaching. In other words, everything in Krishna consciousness complements everything else. In the material world, everything works against everything else. But in spiritual life, the spiritual mathematics is that everything complements. So, as I've written several devotees, the spiritual heart is very large and can accommodate many personalities. And those relationships are not at the expense of another relationship. In the material world, if you have a relationship with somebody, that means it's at the expense of other relationships. You can only have a relationship with somebody, you can only give your heart to a few. But the spiritual heart is very large. So many persons can come into your heart. And you can have a very deep, profound, and eternal relationship with those persons. And the more you deepen your relationship with one person, the deeper your relationship with another person develops. So it's like infinite. It's like, I remember my father taught me, when you shine a light in the sky, when I was 9 years old, I shine a light in the sky, the light's still going. It's still going somewhere. If no object has come, hasn't been scattered, that light's still going. So our love for the Lord, for the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas is an infinite love. It's always growing. And as we develop love for Vaishnavas, our love for Guru grows. And as our love for Guru grows, our love for Krishna grows. And it's working in a principle like that. So Shiksha Guru, actually the primary function of Shiksha is to give fundamental understanding and strength to the Diksha relationship. So both are essential. Therefore Kaviraj Goswami says that both relationships must be there and both are worshipable. But we cannot have one actually with the Hari Guru Vaishnava, Bhagavata Gita. God, Guru, and Vaishnava. So, the functions are there, and that we have Shiksha is essential, but it doesn't obviate the need for Diksha. Because the mantra is given by Diksha, not by Shiksha. The mantra is given by Diksha Guru. In other words, the philosophy is, and the tradition is, at the moment of initiation, the Harinam initiation. Harinam initiation means that one receives the authority to chant Hare Krishna. And at the moment of initiation in the eighth canto, again Prabhupada says that the connection is made. Before that connection is not made. One may be making advancement, of course, but the initiation ceremony actually is the connection with Krishna. So the karma, the connection, and the potency to chant the mantra are some of the essential services, you could say, or duties of the Diksha Guru, which are not there in the Shiksha relationship. So, in other words, the Guru is a transparent medium as well. And the Guru, the Diksha Guru, he is authorized and empowered to take our service and give it to his Guru. And he gives it to his Guru, and he gives it to his Guru, and he gives it to his Guru, all the way back to Krishna. He is the transparent medium. Via medium means that one who says he's my devotee is not my devotee. But one who says he's the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So one may be the devotee of so many persons, but the chastity of the guru-disciple relationship in Diksha is very profound. And Guru is saying, yes, so, I accept you as my disciple, and I will do everything in my power to connect you to our Guru Parampara, thereby giving you the blessings that, that you will go back home, back to Godhead. Doesn't obviate the need for Shiksha in any way, form or matter, but we must understand the functions. Karma, the transparent medium, via medium, to accept the service. If that link is broken, then we cannot jump over, but we must again establish the link. Just like you have a long electric wire, and the current is very powerful. If you get the slightest break in it, you have to replace it. Because the current cannot go, the process the current goes through, so if the wire is broken, it has to be replaced. Now, we have the philosophy, when it is replaced, there should be no pressure. Philosophically, we can understand, and we can simply depend and wait for Krishna's mercy. But we cannot change the philosophy because of an unfortunate instance.
Is that
Again, as it's mentioned here, okay, question 9. If the guru falls, what happens to the mantra one has received from him? Does it become impotent? Does it become polluted? If the guru has fallen, was fallen at the time of one's initiation, does that mean also that one ever factually received the mantra? Answer. The Hare Krishna mantra is always potent. Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. The Hare Krishna mantra is non-different from Krishna himself. So everyone who chants Hare Krishna will benefit. Thousands of people benefit by hearing or chanting with their kirtan parties or festivals on the street. And what to speak of devotees who join ISKCON. They chant Hare Krishna and render devotional service with enthusiasm even before they receive initiation. We should understand that these devotees are making progress in devotional life by following the principles of sadhan in the association of devotees. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that 5 principles of devotional service are extremely potent: associating with devotees, serving the deity, hearing Bhagavatam, chanting Hare Krishna, and living in Vrindavan, or a Krishna conscious place on the level of Vrindavan. These 5 principles are the life of ISKCON. So naturally, anyone who lives in ISKCON can easily make spiritual advancement. But to be properly connected with Krishna and get the full benefit of chanting, a connection with a bona fide spiritual master is required. So, yes, one will always get benefit from chanting Hare Krishna. But to perfect that chanting, we must be chanting under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. Just like there's the statement in Shastra that if one receives a mantra from one who's not a devotee, that mantra will have no effect. So the Hare Krishna mantra always has effect. But to actually chanting mantra means under the authority of Guru. We're not chanting independently. When we're chanting, we're depending simultaneously on the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. Please engage me in your service. But we know that that service is a descending process. Service is not ascending. Service is actually given to us. So whatever service we do or whatever act we do must always be under the supervision of our spiritual authority, ultimately the Guru. So I would say that, answer is stating that even before there was benefit, so if one loses Guru, there's still benefit. But as the principle was valid before initiation, that one must receive a mantra from a bona fide spiritual master under his authority chant, still the authority is just as valid if one loses that Guru, that one must again find a spiritual master under whom one can chant that mantra to perfection. I'd like to read question 10. There's also another point I'd like to make. Okay. If the Guru has fallen, has one's connection with the disciplic succession been actually broken? Similar question. Answer. When one lives within ISKCON, one comes under the shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, under the shelter of Śrīdhara Prabhupāda, and under the shelter of the community of devotees. So all the sincere devotees within ISKCON are living under the shelter of the ISKCON Sampradaya. Sampradaya means spiritual community. Even if a spiritual master falls, the ISKCON community goes on giving shelter to all devotees within it. But to be fully and properly situated in the system of Sampradaya, disciplic succession, we need a bona fide spiritual master. If the spiritual master has fallen, how can that person represent the disciplic succession of pure devotees? In Śrīla Prabhupāda's words, the Guru is the transparent via medium to Krishna. But when the Guru ceases to follow the orders of his spiritual master, he ceases to be transparent. So now, we should link with a qualified spiritual master so that our connection will be strong, complete, and proper. Upon whom should a disciple of a fallen Guru meditate when chanting the Gayatri Mantra directed towards the Guru? Answer. If one's Guru has fallen, one should eventually take shelter of another Guru as described above. And while chanting the Gayatri Mantra or other mantras to the Guru, one should meditate on that person. But meanwhile, in the interim, before one has taken shelter of another spiritual master, what should one do? Our answer here is that this constitutes a special emergency situation. In this circumstance, one may meditate on Śrīdhara Prabhupāda. Having lost one's spiritual master, one may pray to Śrīdhara Prabhupāda, please help me to get a bona fide Guru to maintain my connection with you in devotional service. Can a disciple of a fallen guru serve as a qualified Brahmin to make offerings to Krishna? Answer. The answer to this question is implicit in our answer to the previous question. In this special circumstance, yes. Another point that I would like to make, because I think it's quite clear the GBC answers on this, and if you wanted to go through the Shastric references, as we did one about the mantra, we could. There's many, many references to each of these points. Then there's the question of the heart, of course. So the philosophy is there, but I would like to say that as is presented philosophically, generally, one who is one's Shiksha Guru eventually becomes the Diksha Guru, or that often happens. So we can understand that it will not be a painful decision, as is anything which is, according to Guru Shastra and Sadhu and Krishna consciousness, it eventually becomes, satisfying our very heart's desire. So this philosophy and our patience will lead us to the point, eventually, if we've lost Guru, to a very blissful situation, wherein, by the Lord's mercy, we will take shelter of someone as Shiksha, and that relationship will blossom into a full faith, and it will become one's strong desire and determination to take Diksha from that person. Right now, we accept the philosophy. The GBC is giving, this year especially, Shastric references, elaboration on the point. But there may be some confusion because, of course, one may not be connected in that way. But we should understand that whatever is proper, according to Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, will have a wonderful result in Krishna consciousness. So actually we shouldn't be in anxiety. And one sign of a devotee making advancement is that he always feels that he's working under Krishna's protection. He feels protected by the Lord, that the Lord will protect him and make all arrangements. So we should know that if we accept our GBC body, the conclusions which are given here, and we continue on with patience, then it is only a matter of time until a relationship is established, and as a result of developing that relationship through service and submission, then it won't be that, well, you know, GBC says, so, you know, I have to. It'll be, you know, please accept me as your disciple. That's what'll happen. It'll be natural. And, I hate to keep using this analogy, but just like in the material world, when a man and woman meet, the relationship's not so strong, and then there's service, and then there's a strong desire. So we will, the relationship will become so important to us, because actually we will see that independently I cannot make spiritual advancement. But by the grace of God, the Vaishnavas, and this personality, the spiritual master, then I'm making advancement in spiritual life, and that is the most important thing to me. My eyes are being opened with transcendental knowledge. I'm becoming enlivened. My service is taking on meaning. I'm experiencing ever new fresh realizations and enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness, and we'll want to seal that relationship. It won't be because we have to do it. It'll be because we want to do it. And I gave this analogy, or I use an analogy, of an analogy. When I was preaching in a university, people were saying, why are you vegetarian? I said, we're vegetarian because Krishna says so. Patram pusham palam toy. Offering with love a fruit, a flower, a leaf. That's why we're vegetarian. And all the other things fall in place because whatever Krishna says makes good sense. Whatever Krishna says is perfectly harmonious with all our other interests. The body, the mind, the intelligence, and the soul. Because if you have $100, you automatically have $60, $50, $40. So if you have Krishna, you have everything. So I said, we're vegetarian, and Krishna says, so automatically we're healthy. Automatically our morals and our ethics are proper. Automatically we practice non-violence. Automatically, we have proper nutrition. So they're thinking of it in a little ways. I want to be healthy, therefore I'm vegetarian. I want to be moral, therefore I'm vegetarian. I want to help the environment, therefore I'm vegetarian. But just by accepting Krishna's instruction, one gets these benefits anyway. So in the same way, this philosophy, being the proper philosophy, means that everything that we are desiring will, by following this philosophy, everything that we are desiring will come to pass. And that, you know, when the moment comes that we find, whether we're not initiated now or we're supposed to be reinitiated, whatever the case may be, when we surrender to the bona fide spiritual master, then that will be a natural decision. And we'll want very intensely, we'll desire very intensely. The philosophy is there, but also the heart's there. So the heart will naturally want to seal that relationship eternally. It won't be just because the GBC says. It'll be a natural consequence of Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Is that clear? I would say that's a particular instruction, but Srila Prabhupada himself asks us to chant 16 rounds a day and to increase our hearing and chanting on a codicil, so it's a valid instruction. But the primary instruction and the most important instruction is to chant 16 rounds a day. So at least you should chant 16 rounds on a codicil, and if you can chant 25 or 30 or 50, that's all the better. But I wouldn't say that you would be considered fallen or not following the proper instructions if you chant less. Because our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, has actually set the standard. Now, of course, the guru may, to encourage the disciple, give certain specific instructions. But the basic foundation of our society is the instructions of Srila Prabhupada. Just like when I've given initiation in the past, I've also asked 1 hour a day reading. Now, Prabhupada didn't say that in his books. But I've requested because I know that without that reading of 1 hour a day, then they may not properly progress in devotional service. But the essentialist instruction is four regulative principles and 16 rounds. Another question? They haven't made a statement yet. And I heard through the grapevine, so again, you can't quote me, that they're not preparing to make a statement. But I would hope that they would. I would hope that they would. You know, in other words, they're supposed to apologize and retract their statements, etc. Remains to be seen. Yes? They waited 2 years, something like that. Some were excommunicated, but that's not the same as retracting the power of Guru, because the power of Guru was retracted without excommunicating. It's two different things. As Diksha Guru, yes.
So if the disciples still expect them to actually listen to something form condition at the moment. I'm having questions whether it's rectification.
I would say it's a very sensitive issue, and I would say yes. I would have to, I mean, as an authority in ISKCON and representing GBC conclusions, I would say that, but I certainly would try to explain it with as much care and concern and not deride that person with the hopes of bringing that person or persons to the proper understanding. And to do otherwise would be detrimental to the ultimate purpose of that decision, which was in the interest of the disciples. So I would say yes, because that is a GBC resolution, but I wouldn't say yes. I would say, you know, I would try to explain it philosophically, like I've been trying to do this evening, on the basis of Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu, primarily that the Guru is a transparent via medium, and if he becomes contaminated or polluted for whatever reason, then he no longer functions in that way, and that is an essential aspect of our philosophy and our advancement in devotional service. So therefore that he's removed, so he can no longer function. Because he's not transparent, he can no longer function as Diksha Guru. But I have stated to yourself, and I have stated also this evening, that doesn't mean that one cannot have a shiksha relationship with that person when that person again becomes qualified. And certainly it doesn't mean that one loses one's gratefulness. But what we should not confuse or mix the gratitude that one may have with the need for an ongoing relationship with a bona fide representative of the Lord. The two can exist simultaneously. But the particular function, we have to understand philosophically the function of a Diksha Guru. We can't just use the words Diksha, Shiksha, and so forth. We must understand the actual function that the Diksha Guru is actually accepting our service and giving it to the Guru Parampara all the way back to Krishna. Now there's a qualification for that. And if one no longer has the qualifications, then he cannot function in that situation. So therefore, we must search for a Diksha relationship. The gratitude may remain intact, and eventually the Shiksha may also be there. But the Diksha function is no longer there. It's a practical, philosophical concept of what Diksha is. See, Sridhar Prabhupada, yes. These are tough questions. I wish somebody else was here, besides me, like TKG. You see, if you just excuse me for answering it, kind of like, you know, like any authoritative way, that the principle of GBC was established by Sridhar Prabhupada for the very purpose that the assembled Vaishnavas, the body of the assembled Vaishnavas, decision is more a complete, would you say, representation of Krishna's desire than any one particular individual in the movement. For instance, when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati left, he desired that there be a governing board commission to deal with anything that came up. He didn't want anyone, you know, however great that person was, he didn't feel that any one person could act as founder acharya like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, or eventually as Śrīdhara Prabhupāda did. However great that person was, he felt that the assembled Vaishnavas, meaning in that particular time and circumstance, his most advanced disciples, would act more Krishna consciously, represent more the desire, the will of the Lord, than any one particular individual. So that is our understanding of the Governing Board Commission, our GBC. And one may say GBC's made mistakes in the past, etc. But they were making mistakes when Prabhupada was here. I mean, I can tell you, I was in the meetings. They were making mistakes. Still, Prabhupada said, Governing Board Commission is the absolute authority in ISKCON over any one particular individual, group of individuals, or anything. And if there's something wrong, then, you know, by God's grace alone, it will be corrected, as it has been. Things have been corrected. So I would say that we should understand that the devotees who are sitting on the Governing Board Commission are certainly acting within our interest, and that they are all very sincere devotees, and that they have gone over the subject matter hour after hour, day after day, week after week, year after year, and made their decisions only after deliberating in the interest of the society, which means the interest of the individual. So when they make a decision like that, that they gave a particular person 2 years, then that was within our interest. And with that principle that GBC is the ultimate managing body of ISKCON, and invested with Śrīdhara Prabhupāda's authority, acting with the interest of the society, I should think that our individual vision and our individual concerns should be surrendered to the higher authority of GBC. Now, again, you can't legislate the heart. So if someone goes on like that, seeing that person as Diksha Guru, then I would also say that, as the GBC has stated several times in this paper, that there are special circumstances which are not according, you know, to the rules and regulations. For example, you know, worshipping the deity with the mantra when one doesn't have a bona fide spiritual master, not taking initiation immediately because one's faith is not there and one hasn't found the person. These are special circumstances where the GBC is not giving, you know, a Shastric reference, but is saying according to time and circumstance, the situation may go on. So I would say that although this law is there, and, you know, it can be substantiated by understanding Prabhupada's desire of the authority of the GBC over any particular individual, I would say that if one is still thinking of that person as Diksha Guru, then he should pray to Krishna in his heart to help him understand the decisions given by the GBC as Śrīdhara Prabhupāda's decisions, and that in the meantime, that person is, you know, not a bad person, not a fallen person, not a as a result of the, you know, catastrophe that happened. So I would say both can exist simultaneously. That I could not sit here as a sannyasi and an older member of the society and say that the individual vision is more important than the GBC's decision. I could not say that. But at the same time, I would say, as a person, you know, as a devotee with experience in Krishna consciousness and knowing the, you know, the situation, I would say that, you know, I would allow that person to consider thinking like that, And know that because of that person's sincerity in devotional service, in due course of time, Krishna will inspire that devotee from within the heart to see the situation as it should be seen. I would not in any way force the situation. So I would say both can exist simultaneously. This is a special circumstance. Other situations where an individual has a different opinion or vision than the GBC, I might say differently. I might say you should accept the GBC body. In this particular situation, I wouldn't say that, because we're dealing with a very, very sensitive issue. And the ultimate purpose of that decision is in the interest of that disciple. So if that disciple is not able to accept that decision immediately, then I would say the GBC would wait and say, all right, please keep chanting Hare Krishna. Take shelter in any way that you can, that you feel that you're getting spiritual strength. Can it be accepted the validity of the GBC statement that after 2 years? Right. Well, if we just take from a practical point of view, it poses problems. It poses problems. Because there is a GBC resolution here. And I'm speaking from, you know, one sense of, I'm just explaining what the resolution. That if the, apart from this, the GBC body holds that a guru has been formally removed from the GBC must permanently forfeit all claims to formal disciples. This poses a problem. I'm just stating the resolution, it poses a problem for someone.